This is Jamie Peterson with the Herald and Review for Wednesday, May 6, 2020. On the front page, Path to Reopen, Pritzker Unveils Regional Approach to COVID-19 Recovery by Peter Hancock out of Springfield. Governor J.B. Pritzker unveiled a plan Tuesday for the gradual reopening of the state's economy on a region-by-region basis, but he suggested it could take several months or even a year before the state fully reopens. Until we have a vaccine or an effective treatment or enough widespread immunity that new cases fail to materialize, the option of returning to normalcy doesn't exist, Pritzker said during his daily briefing in Chicago. That means we have to learn how to live with COVID-19 until it can be vanquished. The Illinois Department of Public Health reported 2,122 new cases of COVID-19 and 176 additional virus-related deaths over the previous 24 hours. That represented a sharp increase in daily deaths compared to Monday, when only 46 deaths were announced. There were 13,139 test results reported during that span. That brings the statewide total to 65,962 confirmed cases and 2,838 virus-related deaths. The disease has been reported in 97 of the state's 102 counties. Pritzker outlined the Restore Illinois plan that divides the state into four regions and lays out the criteria for each one to move through five stages of reopening. The four regions are drawn around the Illinois Department of Public Health's Emergency Medical Service regions. They include a Northeast region, primarily Chicago and its surrounding suburbs, a North Central region, a Central region, and a Southern region. The first phase, known as the Rapid Spread, is what all of Illinois was in from mid-March through the end of April. During that phase, a strict stay-at-home order and social distancing guidelines are put in place and only essential businesses remain open. Beginning May 1, all of Illinois moved into the second phase, flattening, in which the rate of infection among those tested and the number of patients admitted to hospital and ICU beds increases at a slower rate. Illinoisans are directed to wear face coverings when outside the home, and limited outdoor activities like golf, boating, and fishing are allowed while observing social distancing guidelines. Once a region's infection rates and hospitalization usage begin to stabilize or decline, it can enter the third phase, recovery, in which face coverings and social distancing will still be the norm. But manufacturing offices, retail, barbershops, salons may reopen to the public, provided they comply with capacity limits and other safety precautions mandated by IDPH. People will also be allowed to gather in public or groups of 10 or fewer. Once a region reaches the point where 20% or fewer of people tested are positive for the disease, and the hospitalization rate remains stable or declines over a period of 28 days, it can enter the fourth phase, revitalization, in which public gatherings of up to 50 people are allowed, bars and restaurants reopen, travel resumes, and childcare and schools can reopen under guidance from IDPH. But face coverings and social distancing will remain the norm during that phase. The earliest that could happen for any region would be May 29, Pritzker said. To be cleared for that phase, regions also must demonstrate that testing is available for anyone, regardless of symptoms or risk factors, and that contact tracing can be completed within 24 hours on at least 90% of patients who test positive. The final phase, Illinois Restored, will occur only when a vaccine or highly effective treatment is widely available or there are no new cases reported over a sustained period. Only at that point will the region's economy fully reopen, including public festivals and large gatherings, businesses and schools, although safety precautions will continue, Pritzker said. It brings me no joy to say this, but based on what the experts tell us and everything we know about the virus and how easily it spreads in a crowd, large conventions, festivals, and other major events will be on hold until we reach Phase 5, Pritzker said. Lawmakers might meet. Pritzker also said the General Assembly might begin meeting before the end of May to address a handful of critical issues, including the state budget. This is a big state, and representatives come from all over the state, hours away, so it may be very difficult to do a lot during the month of May. And certainly, while we're in a stay-at-home order and need to remain in this order, he said. According to the latest revenue reports, lawmakers might have a bigger budget hole to fill when they return than was initially feared. The Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability, or COGFA, reported that base revenues in April came in $2.6 billion lower than the same month last year, largely because the state pushed the income tax filing deadline from April 15 to July 15. The Commission also reported that total revenues so far this year are now $1 billion below last year's level, with 2 months remaining in the fiscal year. In mid-April, Pritzker said Illinois would likely come up $2.7 billion short in the current fiscal year and $6.2 billion short in the fiscal year that begins July 1. Those were based on estimates from the Governor's Office of Management and Budget, which works closely with the Commission. But COGFA said it will be recalibrating its estimates over the coming days. Asked when he plans to release concrete details of the budget adjustments he will recommend, Pritzker said he is working with members of the General Assembly. "I know they have plans, thinking about getting together in May, and so my hope is that we'll be able to work together on a budget for the year," he said. "This is clearly the most unusual budget that anybody will have ever seen, because who has ever seen, at least in our lifetimes, the drop-off of revenue because of a pandemic? And so there's no doubt there's going to have to be a lot of collaboration, even across the aisle, to get things done." Also on page one, local leaders, this plan will help address our challenges, by Annalisa Trofimik. Central Illinois will benefit from a regional approach to reopening the state's economy amid the COVID-19 pandemic, several local leaders said Tuesday. Mayor Julie Moore Wolf said the five-phase plan unveiled by Governor J.B. Pritzker will allow community leaders to focus on their own unique circumstances. Many Illinois mayors had advocated for the regional approach, she said. "Being grouped with other cities in similar situations is a good thing for Decatur because it will give us the chance to address our challenges," she said. "Our main challenge and greatest priority will always be the health of our residents." Decatur is part of the Central Illinois region that also includes Champaign, Christian, Coles, DeWitt, Effingham, Fayette, Logan, Moultrie, Piatt, Sangamon, and Shelby counties, among others. Macon County officials announced on Tuesday the death of the 14th resident who had tested positive for COVID-19. The patient, a woman in her 70s, had lived at Fairhaven Senior Living, which has been associated with more than 70 of the county's total 127 cases. Moore Wolf said she mentioned the facility during a phone call led by Pritzker shortly after the announcement of the plan Tuesday afternoon. She asked if having a nursing home with a high number of positive COVID-19 cases would hurt the county and the others within the region. She said Pritzker advised that would not be the case because the Illinois Department of Public Health is looking at the regions from a broad perspective and would determine their needs for ventilators and intensive care unit beds based on the total regional case numbers. Fairhaven's isn't the only Central Illinois nursing home with a high concentration of cases. Villa's senior care community in Springfield is experiencing a similar issue, with over 50 residents and several staff members having tested positive for coronavirus. Macon County Public Health Administrator Brandy Binkley said the data-driven plan is a welcome step forward. "The plan shows that, yes, we will all be together again and be able to see each other and feel safe doing so," Binkley said. "That should give people hope that this will end. The state is being very upfront, though, that anything could happen, and if we don't take the right steps, we could go backwards." She stressed the importance of continuing to follow guidelines set by medical professionals and government leaders. "These new measures are based on social distancing orders, which will give us the healthiest outcome possible," Binkley said. "We have to get back to normal gradually, otherwise this just will not work." Moore Wolf also said residents must comply with state orders. City Council members on Monday were going to consider an ordinance mirroring the language of the state order requiring face coverings in public. But the mayor removed the agenda item after public outcry about fines outlined in the proposal. She later said an ordinance might not be necessary if everyone follows the rules. "We have to follow social distancing orders and continue wearing face masks," Moore Wolf said. "Let's keep our eye on the goal so we can rebuild this community." Moore Wolf was one of 14 Illinois mayors on the call with Pritzker, including Schaumburg Mayor Tom Daley, Rockford Mayor Tom McNamara, and Metropolis Mayor Billy McDaniel. Some expressed concern about major retailers reopening, like Woodfield Mall in Schaumburg and Harris Metropolis Hotel and Casino on the Kentucky border. We are fortunate enough to not be a border city where people can go to the next state over if a business is closed, Moorwolf said. But we also have to think about our businesses that just might not be able to reopen when this is all over. The city council is set to discuss finances during a study session on May 11. Moorwolf said the Illinois Municipal League has been consistently helpful to mayors and local leaders in making sure their concerns are relayed to the governor's staff. Brad Cole, executive director of the organization that represents municipalities statewide, did not answer specific questions related to the plan, but said it was posted on the IML website. We have been working with the governor's office to reopen all of Illinois safely and swiftly, Cole said in an email. The governor's plan, as released today, is a start toward that goal, and it provides information to communities on the metrics necessary to achieve for reopening. We will continue to work with all communities and all regions on this plan and otherwise as possible within the executive orders. Macon County Board Chairman Kevin Greenfield did not return multiple requests for comment. If you have symptoms, symptoms of COVID-19 include fever, cough, shortness of breath, chills, repeated shaking with chills, muscle pain, headache, sore throat, and loss of taste or smell. Do not go to an emergency room or doctor's office unless it is a true emergency. Call your primary doctor first. If you don't have a primary doctor, you can call DMH Medical Group at 217-876-2856, HSHS Medical Group Patient Advocate at 844-520-8897, Crossing Healthcare at 217-877-9117, SIU at 217-872-3800. For COVID-19 screening, the following resources are available. Memorial Health System's Respiratory Screening Clinic, located at DMH Express Care East, open 7 days a week, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. Before coming to the respiratory clinic, individuals should call 217-876-1200. HSHS St. Mary's Hospital, 24/7 COVID-19 hotline at 217-464-2966. HSHS Medical Group offers free virtual assessments for COVID-19 at www.anytimecare.com. Also on the front page, Trump promotes restart. President, people should think of themselves as warriors. From the Associated Press. Making himself Exhibit A for reopening the country, President Donald Trump visited an Arizona face mask factory Tuesday, using the trip to demonstrate his determination to see an easing of stay-at-home orders even as the coronavirus remains a dire threat. Trump did not wear a face mask, despite guidelines saying they should be worn inside the factory at all times. The people of our country should think of themselves as warriors. We have to open, Trump declared as he left Washington on a trip that was more about the journey than the destination. But take the New York metropolitan area's progress against the coronavirus out of the equation, and the numbers show the rest of the U.S. is moving in the wrong direction, with the known infection rate rising even as states move to lift their lockdowns, an Associated Press analysis found Tuesday. New confirmed infections per day in the U.S. exceeded 20,000, and deaths per day are well over 1,000, according to figures from Johns Hopkins University. And public health officials warn that the failure to flatten the curve and drive down the infection rate in places could lead to many more deaths, perhaps tens of thousands, as people are allowed to venture out and businesses reopen. In Arizona, Trump acknowledged the human cost of returning to normalcy. I'm not saying anything is perfect. And yes, will some people be affected? Yes. Will some people be affected badly? Yes. But we have to get our country open, and we have to get it open soon, he said. Trump had said he would don a face mask if the factory was a mask environment, but in the end, he wore only safety goggles during a tour of the Honeywell facility. Nearly all factory workers and members of the press, as well as some White House staff and Secret Service agents, wore masks. Senior White House staff and Honeywell executives did not. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has recommended that all Americans wear cloth masks when they can't socially distance, such as in supermarkets, especially in places with high transmission rates. In the area where Trump spoke, a large video monitor listed safety guidelines, one of which said, "Please wear your mask at all times." Trump's visit came as the White House said it hopes to wind down its coronavirus task force in the coming month as the president shifts his focus from battling an invisible enemy to rebooting the economy. The president spent about 3 hours in Phoenix touring the Honeywell factory and holding a roundtable on Native American issues. Aides said the trip would be worth the nearly 8 hours of flight time as a symbolic show that the nation is taking steps back to normalcy. The trip was also expected to be a marker of Trump's return to a regular travel schedule, as he hopes the nation too will begin to emerge from 7 weeks of virus-imposed isolation. Trump sees economic revival as a political imperative, as his allies have noted an erosion in support for the president in recent weeks. Republicans believe Trump's path to a second term depends on the public's perception of how quickly the economy rebounds from shutdowns meant to slow the spread of the virus. Nelson Park amenities returning Wednesday. By Carrot Kirsten. All tennis courts and pickleball courts and the disc golf course in Nelson Park will reopen Wednesday with restricted rules of play. Social distancing at a minimum of 6 feet apart will be required, and players must follow the rules and guidelines set by the United States Tennis Association, disc golf, and pickleball organizations. Open green space, parks, and trails are currently open to the public. The Park District, in a statement Tuesday, said the reopening of additional park amenities is based on guidelines from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, Illinois Department of Public Health, and Macon County Health Department. Restrooms and water fountains may have limited access. Anyone experiencing COVID-19 symptoms should not use parks or trails. News about activities and programs related to reopen updates can be found at www.decatur-parks.org. And on to page 3 with local news, with the Ag column by Stu Ellis. State FFA responds to virus. It was probably an inevitability, but the final decision was announced Tuesday that the traditional Illinois FFA convention would not be held. Instead of see you next year, the FFA organization and all of its board members, student leaders, and faculty advisors have created a remarkable replacement in the form of a virtual convention. Don't pshaw the concept, Executive Director Mindy Bunselmeyer of the Illinois FFA says. We have the opportunity for more people to see the convention in its virtual format. We have been having record attendance at conventions the last few years. I anticipate by converting to virtual, we get all of our industry friends, all of our farm media friends behind us. More people will see the state convention than ever have before. While thousands of participants will not gather at the Bank of Springfield Center beginning the second week of June, they will be on their computers with the ability to participate. The convention consists of many different competitions, speeches of retiring state officers, and election of new officers. The latter two will still be held on their regular schedule. Many of the competitive events, public speaking, parliamentary procedure, agri-science fair, and others, will be held later in the summer. Proficiency Award winners will be announced during the convention, as will the candidates for Star Farmer and Star Agribusiness. Honorary FFA degrees will also be announced, along with scholarship winners and other honors. The election of the 5 state officers will be held as scheduled to ensure leadership in the coming year. An electronic voting process has been tested and deemed secure and workable for all of the voting delegates who will be on their computers at home. Bunselmeyer, who has coordinated dozens of changes from in-person to digital, says what is really important is that it has been a lesson for all of us, regardless of your connection with FFA and its process, and it is very important for us to keep these events alive for our young people. It is very important for us to celebrate our young people. She added, while the convention is important, COVID-19 has emphasized the need and value of relationships with those around us. And so while this is important, we do have members whose families have lost their livelihood, and we have members with far greater struggles than whether or not we get to have a convention. So it is focusing on one another and empowering and embracing one another, and that is the best lesson for all of us in this process. While there will not be handshakes, hugs, and physical renewal of friendships from years past, the FFA organization has risen to the challenge to take care of business in an efficient way, despite the impact that the coronavirus has had on our society. It demonstrates the organization is alive and well and has great leadership from adults and students alike. Mask, concealed carry, not an issue. Macon County law enforcement, no problem during coronavirus. By Tony Reed. Citizens who are both masked and armed will not alarm law enforcement indicator in Macon County just as long as they are not committing a crime, top law enforcement official said Tuesday. Before COVID-19 came along and upended normal life, carrying a concealed weapon while also concealing your identity was a Class 4 felony worthy of up to 3 years in prison. But Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker has stated that wearing a face mask in public to comply with his orders to try and stem the spread of the virus would not violate concealed carry rules. Both Decatur Police Command and the Macon County State Attorney's Office say they have no problem with that. I guess from my point of view, there is just no issue here, said Decatur Police Deputy Chief Shane Brandel, who commands the patrol division. Now, if you're wearing a face mask as a ruse to allow you to commit thefts and robberies, I would view that differently. Pritzker's order won't last forever, however, and there is likely to be a long transition phase back to normal life and rules as the state hopefully puts its COVID-19 crisis behind it. That means some people will feel comfortable wearing their masks after the point when the state says they don't have to. If they are also legally carrying a concealed weapon, that could pose some issues in encounters with law enforcement. That's an interesting question and probably something the governor and legislature would want to address, said Brandel. Locally, we would look at it on a case-by-case basis. Brandel said a gun owner simply trying to protect his or her health is clearly not posing a threat to anyone. As a police officer and as a leader in the police department, I would not want officers enforcing that concealed carry laws under those situations, he added. That view was shared by Macon County State's Attorney Jay Scott, who said the intent of the law is not to prosecute people wearing a mask for safety or medicinal purposes. Scott has even gone as far as issuing a statement on the state's attorney Facebook page. To clear up any uncertainties, the position of the Macon County State's Attorney's Office is that concealed carry license holders are not in violation of state law for carrying concealed while wearing proper masks in public during the COVID-19 pandemic. Carry on. Scott said his office, like the police, will judge any situation that comes up on its merits. He said, for example, that if you are found in suspicious circumstances while wearing a mask from the Scream movies, you are probably up to no good. ADM donating additional $800,000 for coronavirus assistance. By Garrett Karsten. Archer Daniels Midland Company is donating $800,000 for food assistance, hunger relief, and support of hospitals and first responders. The company said Tuesday that the donation for organizations supporting COVID-19 relief efforts was made in addition to over $1 million the company previously committed. The money comes from ADM Cares, the charitable arm of the company, which has North American headquarters in Decatur. The contributions will go to organizations with a direct impact in communities and regions where the company has a large presence, it said. For example, ADM has partnerships with the Greater Chicago Food Depository, Lawrence Hall, The Bigger Table, and the Trotter Project to help address food scarcity in Chicago, where its global headquarters is located. These are unprecedented times, and ADM is committed to doing our part to help address the tremendous need around the world right now, said Chairman and CEO Juan Luciano in the statement. We are proud to take part in Giving Tuesday's efforts to unite companies, individuals, and communities around the world to tackle the great challenges brought on by the global fight against COVID-19. A company spokeswoman said ADM is still assessing what Decatur organizations might benefit. What Others Are Saying, an editorial from the Los Angeles Times. Why We All Must Respond to the Census. Despite the mass disruptions caused by the COVID-19 pandemic, the U.S. Census Bureau continues to forge ahead with the constitutionally mandated decennial count of everyone in the country. It has not been easy. Citing concerns about the coronavirus, the Trump administration has temporarily closed or postponed opening the Bureau's regional offices until June 1, and has delayed deployment of door knockers, who ferret out hidden populations and encourage residents to turn in their questionnaires. It also has urged Congress to push back the Census Bureau's reporting deadline from the end of the year to the end of April 2021 to give the Bureau some breathing room to conduct as complete a count as possible. But the key component in getting an accurate count has less to do with the counters than with the counted. We the people need to do better in answering the crucial census questionnaire. As of Friday, 55.6% of the nation had responded since the first wave of census mailings went out in March. Those numbers hint at a troubling disparity. Some higher-income small cities have response rates around 70%, but low-income neighborhoods, which tend to have higher proportions of immigrants, have response rates below 40%. In and around Skid Row, the rate drops to near 10%. A key problem there, of course, is the inherent difficulty in getting census information to homeless residents. But many homeless people and those living on poverty wages also suffer from a lack of internet access, an obstacle in a process that, for the first time, will rely on people filling out the census questionnaires online. This is just the first wave of the census taking, but it's among the most important. Notices went out in March inviting people to log on to my2020census.gov and answer a dozen questions about where they were living on April 1, the official census day, their household size, and some demographic details. Those questions can also be answered over the phone at 844-330-2020 or by filling out and mailing back a printed questionnaire, which tends to be sent to the households of people who have not responded online. Either way, the process takes minutes. Households that fail to respond through any of these avenues eventually will be visited by official census takers, which means, obviously enough, that the more people who respond to the census now, the fewer people census counters will need to bird dog in the coming months. Given the risks of spreading COVID-19, it is vitally important that people take the initiative to respond online, via phone or through the mail, to preclude the Census Bureau from having to send workers around to conduct face-to-face interviews. It's silly to entertain that risk during a pandemic when it can be forestalled by simply responding through one of the no-contact avenues. Why is this so important, especially in hard-to-count neighborhoods of immigrants and low-wage workers? Around $1.5 trillion in federal spending is distributed each year using formulas that incorporate census data, including payments for Medicare and Medicaid, programs funded through block grants, Head Start, and the National School Lunch Program, among many others. Clearly, many of those programs have significant effects on low-income communities, the very places where census participation traditionally is lower. Congress also uses the results to reapportion seats in the House of Representatives for the next decade. In a transparent ploy intended to dissuade immigrant households from cooperating with the census, the Trump administration sought to add a question asking the citizenship status of everyone in a household, ostensibly to collect data that could help enforce anti-discrimination laws. Bear in mind that about a quarter of the nation's 44 million immigrants are living here without permission. Immigrant communities tend to live in urban areas and support Democratic candidates, so adding the question could have tilted legislative and congressional elections for the next decade in Republicans' favor. Fortunately, even this conservative Supreme Court saw through the ruse and barred the question, but a part of the population already suspicious of the federal government has become even more so. This has been Jamie Peterson reading the Herald and Review for Wednesday, May 6th, 2020. We'll return after a short break.